So it's been an interesting week because a few days ago I found a new bottom. But the funny thing is, it wasn't called a bottom on the map, it was called a hole, which is sounds even more racy. But if you're listening to our podcast for the first time, you may be concerned about the content, but fear not. It's just another example of these dry valleys in Wiltshire that we have that are called bottoms. But this one had a fantastic name. It was called Kidnapper's Hole.
Yes.
Just outside of Warminster.
So it's not anything your doctor would be interested in then.
No, nothing like that at all.
Excellent.
Although it does raise a question, Kidnapper's Hole, where does that come from?
Wait, you mean you're not going to tell me?
No, I haven't been able to find out. So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. This is podcast number 9, would you believe? Time flies when you're having fun. So we started this on the first week of January. We're now coming to the end of April. And we've still got plenty more of these episodes to come. My name is Glyn Coy and I am a photographer. But from doing this podcast, I'm also an amateur historian, a bumbling quasi-archaeologist. Amongst other things, and with me I have my usual sidekick, Mr. Timlett.
Good morning, Paul Timlett here. I found another way to describe what I do: a visual artist.
Keep these coming.
Yeah, I'm running out of ideas. I nicked that from somebody this morning. I thought, what on earth is a visual artist? Somebody who's not a sound artist, I suppose. But
yeah.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to dry up quite soon on that front.
Okay, so 2 weeks since our last podcast, there's been quite a lot going on actually, because now the weather's nice, we seem to be able to get out a bit more. So what have you been up to, Paul?
I seem to have spent an awful lot of time on my hands and knees, which it just occurred to me this morning. About a week ago, I was out in Salisbury Plain and I decided to go looking for fairy shrimps. And if you haven't heard of those or don't know what they are, they're tiny little, maybe a couple of inches long, and they're almost translucent. And they're shrimps that live, I don't know how exclusive they are to Salisbury Plain, but you do very, very rarely find them in puddles on Salisbury Plain, and they get around by attaching themselves to the wheels of tanks and or the tracks of tanks and the wheels of Land Rovers and that sort of thing, and then they get carried from one puddle to the other. But apparently their eggs can survive in baked mud, dried mud for years, and then they emerge. And I'd never seen one before, and I'd met the local gamekeeper who said, oh well, sometimes you see them. And he sort of pointed off the place I was walking. So I descended this track on a bridleway and was on my hands and knees staring to this puddle. And it was a bit embarrassing because a film crew from the BBC appeared over the hill just as I had my head in this puddle, which wasn't entirely unexpected because a mate of mine over the road is a BBC reporter. And I knew that he was filming on Salisbury Plain somewhere, but the chances of him finding me just as I had my head in a puddle was a bit embarrassing. Anyway, they seemed to be quite excited by the fact that there was a couple of fairy shrimps in there. And then,
let me just get this straight. Someone comes over the brow of a hill and sees you on your hands and knees with your head in a puddle.
Yes,
it's okay.
Well, at least I didn't turn around and run away. But yeah, I had some explaining to do. Put it that way.
Yeah, but that's what's interesting. I mean, the shrimps, they sound like they're kind of on the edge of existence, really. I mean, such a tenuous way to live, just to exist in a puddle. And
I think I read somewhere that they are, well, I mix it up with something else, that they go back like thousands and thousands of years, or almost to like the dawn of time on the planet, you know. They're a real sort of ancient life form. But I mean, I've lived on Salisbury Plain for what, 26 years now. It's the first time I've seen one. But unless you're really looking for them, they're so translucent. I was trying to film it on my phone, and I couldn't even see them to pick it up on the camera.
Yeah, I think I saw someone else on Instagram recently put some up about
that. Was Wayne Ford, who I might give a bit of a mention to, and Mel. It's May, isn't it? Melanie May.
Yes, Mel. Yeah.
Yeah. Who I met on a walk recently. But yeah, Wayne has got a super. Well, in fact, Mel has as well. Super Instagram feeds. Wayne has got two actually. One called, I think it's just Wayne Ford, and the other one's called Notes from. Oh God, what's it called? Pinyard. Notes from Pinyard. Something like that. I'll look it up in a minute. But yeah, Wayne had put a little video of fairy shrimps, and that kind of got me thinking about it. And I thought, yeah, I'd forgotten about fairy shrimps, and it was literally my first time looking for them. You know, spending any time to look for them, I found a couple. But what have you been up to then?
So last weekend I went back to Warminster, because I know we've talked about the Warminster skyline before. I think that was in the first podcast, but I wanted to explore a bit more of it over to the other side towards the West Wilts Golf Club. So I actually parked near, right in the centre of Warminster at the station. And there's a great big hill behind the station with covered in trees called Cop Heap. So I had a wander up there. It's very steep, but that hill is actually a war memorial. It's been sort of designated to the town as a war memorial in itself. So you've got a freedom to roam over it. And then I went up past the golf course, around Kidnapper's Hole, that fantastic bottom, and then around the other side, back through the woods. It was a really nice walk. Not very long, but a lot to see, very picturesque. But the other thing I did is the other night I decided to take a wander along the Coffin Trail, which runs between West Ashton and Steeple Ashton. And I think I'm going to go back and do a longer blog piece on that, because it's quite an interesting route, and it's quite picturesque as well, you know, because especially when you're going towards Steeple Ashton, you see the church on the hill in the distance, because Steeple Ashton's church is enormous. It's like a mini cathedral.
Yeah, it really stands out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
See it from a long way off.
Yeah, and you can see the trail going through the farmers' fields, and the crops are growing up now, so it's very distinctive. It's quite an interesting route.
So did you know about the Coffin Trail before you went there?
I did, yeah, yeah. Apparently it was because back in the day, before West Ashton had a church, because it was in the mid-1800s that they built St John's there. Before that, they used to use the church at Steeple Ashton for funerals. So they would, you know, transport the coffins along this path through the fields from West Ashton to the church at Steeple Ashton. And it's just retained the name, the Coffin Trail. And I noticed partway along there's a beautiful little stone bridge, which was only built, I think, last year by Andrew Zeminski, the stonemason.
So the stonemason you mentioned, I'd not heard of him. Is he still alive, or is this going back?
No, the stonemason is still alive. I mean, Andrew Zeminski is an active stonemason in the southwest. He's based in Froome.
Oh, right.
And he wrote a book that came out last year or the year before. I think it's called The Stonemason. I'd really recommend looking it up, because he goes through the history of the British Isles through its buildings and its stonework, and he uses his own knowledge of stonemasonry to, for instance, you know, talk about or write about how he thinks Stonehenge was built, how they crafted the stones, and also how they transported the stones. So he's a lot of his stuff in the book is based around the southwest. So you've got churches, you've got Stonehenge, you've got Avebury, you've got West Kennet Long Barrow. Then he does some work at the Roman baths in Bath. It's just a fascinating insight, because it comes at the history from a different angle from what you normally see. It's coming through the eyes of a stonemason. And yeah, it's a brilliant book, very, very well written actually. And he talks about things like when he's driving his pickup truck and finds a sarsen stone in a lay-by, and him and his mate get the tools out and try and get it out of the ground and shove it in the back of the truck so they can use it for raw materials. And he goes around travelling around quarries of different parts of the country to pick up certain types of stone, whether it's Portland stone, or various different examples. It's a really interesting book.
I'll put a link to that book then in the show notes on the website.
But, maybe we should get him on as a guest.
Yeah.
just throwing that out there, because I think that's another thing, is we're going to try and get some guests on in the future, and we've got some discussions going on with a couple of people around that. On the podcast plans, we are going to start getting the odd guest on. And we've got the first two guests kind of lined up. We just need to lock in the dates. But one of them is quite intriguing because as part of this guest appearance, we're going to be doing an outside broadcast. We're going to take some recording equipment out into the field, and we're actually going to, it won't be live, we'll record it and obviously refine it, but it will be on location, as it were. And also we're going to video it, so we'll shove it up on YouTube, so you can start to get to see our ugly mugs as well as hearing our beautiful voices.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want to be in any of those scenes, but it'll be good fun. I don't think the plan is to have an hour-long video. That would just be too awful. But yeah, I mean, it's quite difficult when we're talking about some of the walks and places we go, and you try and describe them. It is quite difficult. And yes, there are photographs on the website, on the blogs, and on the Facebook group. But to actually see a video of things, and when we went up and had an initial chat with our first guest, it kind of really brought it out to us then, didn't it, that wouldn't it be great to show people this and some of the things that he was showing us, and to hear him talk about it.
Yeah, so another couple of things. I haven't announced this yet, but it is up there. I've put up an online shop and on the website. So the reason I've done that is because whilst everything we do is free, and it always will be free, there is a little bit of a cost, you know, to run the platform and things like that. So I thought, rather than begging for money, I'd just put up a shop and sell some stuff. So we've actually got some things up there, like T-shirts, prints, postcards, greetings cards. So go and have a look. If there's anything that takes your fancy, please do purchase and help us keep the lights on. But the other thing that's in the pipeline, I'll announce it when we know more, but we're in discussions with a quite well-known organization in Wiltshire about doing some jointly sort of advertised Hidden Wiltshire walks. So we're just trying to get those in the calendar, and once we know more about that, that will be announced. So yeah, so there's some good things coming up in the pipeline, and that's all been developing over the last few weeks and months. So exciting times ahead, I think.
Tom, you gave up your job?
Yeah, don't tempt me.
Right. So we today are going to talk about the Folly Wood walk, aren't we?
I wrote
a blog about, but it's one of these sort of collaborative things. It was a joint walk, albeit on different days, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, and I did it in a different direction, and it all came about from just a letter that was written. But we'll talk about that. But yeah, we're going to transition now into the next podcast, which is Folly Wood, and let's not forget the Headless Horseman. So we're going to talk about Folly Wood. Now, this was an interesting one. We've already mentioned this before in a previous podcast about how it arose, but it became because I had a letter from David Alderslade, the artist, who actually handwrote a letter and sent me a copy of an extract of an Ordnance Survey map to show me exactly where it was. But he suggested that Folly Wood might be a place that we'd be interested in going to have a look at, because from a photography perspective, because David takes photos as well, he thought it was fantastic. And he's also painted it. We'll get onto what he's actually painted later, but it's just an extraordinary view that's quite sort of, I don't know, it's quite eerie and haunting. Which, having said that, would lead us on to talk about the fact that there is a local legend that the area is haunted by a headless horseman. He wrote me this letter, and I told Paul about it, and we ummed and ahed about it on the map, and then, because Paul's got a bit more time than I have, being a man of leisure, he actually went and crafted, as he always does, crafted a really good circular walk that took it in. But there was a little bit of controversy and drama along the way, because it wasn't quite as straightforward as we thought it would be. But it was good that you could do the recce, and then I just followed the highlights.
Between us, we were there sort of in the space of about 5 days. We went 3 times, didn't we? Because I, having sort of plotted this route, and we'll talk about it in a minute, but having plotted this route and found that it wasn't viable, I then had to go back on another day and figure out a workaround, which was a perfectly satisfactory workaround. And I've learned a bit more about that in the last few days, so I'll share that in a bit. But the walk, it's on the website. I think it's just called Folly Wood and the Mystery of the Headless Horseman. But it's one of those walks where you could actually start in a number of different places. So it's a circular walk, and it doesn't really matter where you start it. I happen to start it in Easterton with my usual walking chum, Stu. So we started in Easterton and sort of did it from there. But you could also, you started in Urchfont, didn't you?
Yeah, I started in Urchfont, just because I know Urchfont and knew where to park and stuff. So. Yeah.
And in hindsight, that might be a better place to start. I think Easterton's not that easy to park, because it's sort of the one sort of road that goes through it, the B3098 that goes from Market Lavington to Urchfont and beyond, and there aren't many sort of side roads that are suitable for parking. So unless you can park on the main road itself, which can be a bit difficult, Urchfont might be a better place. But the advantage of the Easterton start is that you're right by the Royal Oak pub, which, when Stu and I were there, was just in the process of being rethatched, and my wife went past it the other day, and it is now finished. It's rethatched and it's open. Hurrah! So you could end your walk with a pint in the Royal Oak, or even begin your walk with a pint in the Royal Oak. We parked on the main road quite near the bus shelter, actually, and it was astonishing. I mean, a number of times I've sort of driven past there, and in fact I did take my bike over to Easterton once and sort of took it over in the car and parked up by the bus stop and sort of rode up onto that part of the plain, and I never noticed the mural or the graffiti art that's in the bus stop, that's in the bus shelter there. In fact, I walked past it and Stu said, "Oh, have you seen this?" It's like a little Banksy. It's an amazing picture. I don't know who did it. I think it's been there a while. So that's you know, a good reason to start it. Well, you pass it anyway, I guess, if you start at Urchfont, if you sort of look out for it. But it's just opposite the pub. But from there, we walked, and basically the next sort of landmark was really the jam factory. I did take a bit of a detour, which, there was a couple of sort of minor points of interest on the detour, but you could head straight to where the jam factory is. And the jam factory now is it's not a big housing development. They're building new houses there. It's a nice location. But it was the site of, guess what, a jam factory, the Easterton Jam Factory, which I was doing a bit of research on afterwards. And the jam factory was started at the turn of the you know, the early part of the 20th century by a guy called Samuel Saunders. And it then sort of expanded, and I guess he used sort of local fruits, and the local fruit grower was a guy called Samuel Moores. And the company sort of grew and expanded over the years, and from the sort of early 20th century, it managed to stay open right through to 1998, when it was part of a much bigger foods company, and they closed it down. So they've built, they put this little housing development on the site of the old jam factory. But from there, we sort of headed up towards Easterton Sands, which, if you've seen my blog on the website, it's one of those things that almost walked past and think, God, how did we miss that? We're walking up a bridleway, I think it was, and it's like a sort of deep hollowway. And I sort of looked up to my right, and it was basically a giraffe staring down at me. Through the trees, and
a giraffe,
and I thought, what the blimmin' is that? And then sort of looked to my to the left of the giraffe, and there's an elephant. I mean, these are full size sculptures of a giraffe and an elephant. It's in somebody's garden or paddock, and they're just sort of looking down into the holloway. It's just most bizarre thing. So I don't know anything about that. I'm sure. And I have, since I wrote the blog, a few people from Easterton have contacted me about other aspects of the walk. So I'd love to know what that's all about and who that is. Who's put those sculptures, life-size elephant, in their garden, as you do. we walked on up to sort of headed up the hill to Easterton Sands. And Easterton Sands is some lovely houses up there with just incredible views. It's right up on top of the hill, and you look down towards Easterton and then across onto Salisbury Plain and to the firing area. And it's a big place for the horse establishment, and I think they may train racehorses up there. But there's, you know, a lot of the land up there is, a lot of the fields are given over to livery yards, stabling, horses grazing in paddocks, being exercised. I mean, I don't know anything about horses, but beautiful looking horses up there. But we got up to the top of this, the sort of ridge. And basically what we're doing, we're heading for Westwood, which is what David Alderslade suggested we go and have a look at. So I'd plotted a route that took us basically walking past Westwood. So there's another wood next to Follywood called Westwood. So I'm getting my woods
mixed up. That's not to be confused with the Westwood near Marlborough, by the way.
No, it's not. I'm getting my woods mixed up. So I think David recommended Follywood. Did I say Westwood? Yeah. So David recommended a visit to Follywood. So I was going to basically walk down through it's difficult to tell from the map where Westwood ends and Follywood starts. So I was heading to Follywood, past Westwood to on my left to the north, and heading to Follywood. And there's a footpath that seems to drop down through Follywood, and that's where we tried to go. And again, look at your map, you'll see it very clearly marked. And it may be clearly marked on the map, but it ain't there. It's as a lot of investigation and to-ing and fro-ing and conversations, it turns out that the path through Follywood has been deliberately blocked. So at the top, the southern end, where we were planning to drop into Follywood, basically the sign has been removed. There's a big pile of earth at the top, and there's no sign of a footpath at all. In fact, the second time I went back a few days later, I walked around the pile of earth, and there was the path. And it's such a shame, because it does drop right very steeply in another sort of hollow all the way through the wood. And it's quite a steep drop from the top of Follywood down to the bottom. But down at the bottom end, it has been blocked with a barbed wire fence. And the original plan was to sort of follow that footpath, and you then have to you're met by the railway line, and this is sort of, you know, intercity line. You get the what used to be called 125s, you know, the Great Western trains go hurtling through there. So you have to cross the railway line. And I was looking at the map and thinking, well, there must be a tunnel there. It looks like a tunnel on the map. And then eventually we ended up by a place we were heading to, which is marked on the map as just as Moat, near Potton Park Farm. But it, as I say, the path had been blocked at the bottom. And that's why I had to go back a couple of days later to figure out a way around it. And it was quite easy. And if you look on the map, there's a place called Sands Farm, and there is a bridleway that goes just behind Sands Farm and drops down through Westwood as opposed to Follywood.
Yeah.
And that then continues on to the railway, and there is a tunnel there under the railway, and you've got a bridleway that heads up almost directly to where it says Moat on the map. So. You know, it's a perfectly acceptable way round, except if you do the walk, bear in mind I went, I don't know, was it a couple of weeks ago, after a dry period. It's even longer dry period now because it still hasn't rained. And even then, that stretch north of the railway line was an absolute quagmire.
It was completely
churned up. It was almost impassable. And I was sort of crawling in the hedge to get through it. So, you know, in anything but the absolute driest of seasons, this is going to be a welly boots job. But just to sort of perhaps finish the story about the blocked footpath, I, in response to my blog, somebody did contact me and say that this has been raised at sort of parish council level. It's been sort of quite controversial, and it's also blocked. There's no sign of it up at where, the end where you know where the moat is. But apparently, I don't know when this happened, but there is no way if you use this footpath to cross the railway.
Yeah.
So you know, there's no bridge, there's no tunnel, and of course. Unless there's a gate. I mean, there are some railways do have gates, pedestrian gates you can get through. But I think for the moment, it sounds like the parish council has decided not to pursue reopening this path because there's no way to cross the railway. And you do have two other rights of way very close by, which do cross the railway.
And cross the railway in a very safe way, of course. One's a tunnel, one's a bridge.
Exactly.
On the map here, I can see the path takes you to the railway.
Yeah.
And the path on the other side of the railway takes you to the railway, but nothing takes you across.
No, there's nothing in between. But as I say, there may well be a gate. I mean, I know of one in the Wylie Valley where you know, there's just a pedestrian gate and you look right, look left, make sure there's no trains coming and, you know, across you go. But anyway, I got across. So what I was heading for was this thing that's marked Moat.
Yeah, this moat is an interesting one because when I looked at the moat on Google Maps, it just looked like a load of trees.
Yeah.
You couldn't see any appreciable shape of a moat or anything. But when I actually walked up to it and walked inside, you could clearly see the moat shape around the square of land.
And that's the interesting thing. It's a square or a rectangle, isn't it?
Whereas, yeah.
So I mean, it wasn't a castle or anything. It's not big enough. But when I sort of researched it, it was supposedly it's a moated enclosure, and on the sort of raised bit of land in the middle was apparently a gatekeeper's lodge, and this was the an entrance to a deer park which once stood there on what is now Potton Wick Farm. Or is it Potton Wick or Potton Park Farm?
Potton Park.
Potton Park Farm, which is at Potton Wick. And this lands, this was the manor of Potton, which apparently was held by the bishops of Salisbury from at least the 11th century, because it's in the Domesday Book. And the bishops of Salisbury held this manor. And I think they held it until something like the 19th century. I think it sort of it was sold off, and then in the restoration it was brought back to the church. And I think now the church commission still has some sort of involvement in this land. But there was the bishops had a deer park, and they also had a manor house in Potton, which was rebuilt in 1881, and which is now the headquarters of the Wiltshire Fire Service.
Oh yes, I know that.
Yeah, the building. Yeah. It's on the road over to Wharton, and it's the new building is it's not a very attractive building. Rebuilt in 1881, and I think it was meant to be to mimic some other sort of design, but it's not the most attractive of places. I think it is listed, and it's Grade 2 listed or something. Mm. But there would have been, it's thought that there was the manor house of the manor of Potton that was held by the bishops of Salisbury. It always stags me the amount of money that the church had and still has. And these are the very grand lifestyles that these guys have. As we saw the other week when we were chatting to what hopefully will be our first guest. The house that he lives in that used to be the rectory, didn't it?
Yes.
A very grand place. It was that. In fact, I should go back there because when you and I went, there was bluebells were just starting to come through, and the enclosure, that little square of land, was completely carpeted in
that. I'd imagine that's going to be a sea of blue.
Absolutely.
Right now, or maybe certainly in the next few weeks.
Mm. But maybe this is for another podcast, but this morning I was reading about Potton, and it really got hammering during the Civil War. It's sort of between 1643 and about, was it 1670 something? I mean, it seemed like the two opposing armies, and certainly the parliamentary troops, kept sort of billeting there, and of course they were just taking everything from the community to support the army, and they were the local people were really getting hammered. And I think there was a tax was levied to help fund the parliamentary troops, and at some point they just sort of said, we're not paying it, we haven't got anything, enough's enough. Yeah. And I suppose having the bishops of Salisbury holding this manor, and whether the deer park was still there, I don't know, but I guess the manor house would be, and these poor local people who had nothing anyway were just being plundered. From the boat, I sort of headed back, basically still trying to get to Folly Wood. Look at my map now. I think it's a bridleway that heads to along the sort of southern edge of the moat, and then along sort of heading east, vaguely in the direction of Urchfont on that way. And I was trying to get to the bridleway, which then heads southeast up through Folly Wood.
Mm.
I say trying to get it. I did get to it, and this is where I had just one of those remarkable encounters. And I was walking along that bridleway. Bear in mind, it is a bridleway, not a byway. And I heard this vehicle coming up behind me. And I was about to get my Mr. Angry head on. Why are you driving on a bridleway? And I saw this enormous dog. I thought it was a horse initially, trotting along in front of this Land Rover. The biggest dog I've ever seen. And
so the dog was being walked by a Land Rover?
Yes, exactly that. Well, actually, it looks like the dog was towing the Land Rover. And he was trotting along, minding his own business. And I'm not a great dog lover. I'm not frightened of dogs, but I thought, oh, blimmin' heck. I'll just keep to the side. And this is a damn big dog. I mean, it weighed more than me. And anyway, the Land Rover stopped, and this guy jumped out, or fell out. And this... He said, have you seen any sheep? No, not round here. And anyway, what transpired was a conversation that lasted for about 45 minutes to an hour. And this guy turned out to be Mark Wellerhan. And the dog was just the most beautiful dog, so gentle and friendly. and the dog was called Crook. And it was only sort of yesterday it occurred to me that actually his name, I think his name comes from, you've got Crookwood Farm locally and Crookwood Lane, which goes to between Pottenwick and Urchfont. And Mark actually owns a plot of land just off Crookwood Lane, and he owns a stretch of the stream there. So I'm assuming that he's named the dog Crook after Crookwood. Anyway, Crook stood patiently whilst Mark and I passed the time of day. And turns out Mark is fascinating history, and there's more about this on in the blog. And I sort of did do a bit of research on him afterwards, and he said, "Oh, you know, have a look at my website." He said, "But I'm not sure it's still live." He said, "I haven't done anything in a long time, but have a look on there." And he said, "I think I might have a Facebook page. I'm not sure." And it turns out he's a sculptor, a poet, and an illustrator, and he lives in Devizes. But he does own this cabin, and he camps out in this cabin. And the reason he was driving on this bridleway is I think he owns some of it or all of it. So, you know, he's allowed. And anyway, it's just the most remarkable conversations. What else did he do? I think at some point, I subsequently found out he was in the theatre. I think he acted, but was also maybe sort of set design and set builder. He told me that he'd been in the MOD at some point. He also told me that he'd lived in a mud hut in Botswana for a period. He also told me he had a bullet in his back. So it's just,
one of life's characters, clearly.
Oh, my God. And you know, you'll find his photograph on the blog. What a remarkable man. I could have stood there all day chatting to him. It was just the most incredible conversation. And at one point, he sort of crawled back into his Land Rover and came out again brandishing three books, and he said, "Oh, here's some of my poetry, have this and I said, "But you know, how am I going to pay for it?" "I don't want to worry about that." And I had read about half of one of them, and I tell you what, it's good poetry, it's bloody good.
Yeah, yeah. But, absolutely.
They sell his books in the bookshop in Devizes, where you can also find, or you could find, the Hidden Wiltshire book at one point.
Yeah, I used to sell my Hidden Wiltshire books through there. Yeah. I'm not sure if they got any left in stock, but you know, if you wanted to catch one, that's I've run out of them, but the Devizes bookshop may have some.
Yeah, in fact, Mark had heard of Hidden Wiltshire because he'd seen the book in the bookshop books.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said, "Well, if you want to pay for the book, you know, just it's up to you." He said, "Just go into the Devizes bookshop." And he said, yeah, but just don't tell my agent," he said, "because I've given away more books than I sell." So it's not a very good business model. But somebody else contacted me through the website and said that she had also met Mark out there, and she was on an evening walk, and she said she was talking to him for 2 hours, and by the time she left, it was dark. But they're fantastic, and I did learn you know, a bit more about, or a lot more about, the area, and you know, one of the reasons I was heading to Follywood. But after I left Mark, I sort of crossed the bridge over the railway, which you took a photograph of, didn't you, and put on the Facebook group.
Yeah,
with the graffiti on it.
Who says don't jump?
Yes, it's brilliant. Which side of the parapet was it on?
It's quite funny, because when I was there, and I was stood on the bridge, and I saw that graffiti that said don't jump, and I sort of took a photo of it, and you can see the railway line going off into the distance. But then just after that, this intercity train came thundering by at about 130 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And I suddenly realised, blimey, this is the main route to London.
Yeah, it is.
That's passing through here.
Yeah, I think it heads on to Westbury from there, Pusey to Westbury.
Yeah.
So in about this area where the bridge crosses the railway, you start the story of the Headless Horseman. And apparently, I'm not entirely sure where, and Mark had a theory about where the house was. There was quite a grand manor house built there at the edge of the woods, and it was built by a sort of local eccentric called Seymour Wroughton, who lived in the 18th century. And he built a house on the edge of the wood. And I don't know whether the wood would have been there when he built the house or whether it would have stood separate to the wood. But it seems to go under a number of different names. So it was certainly called Castle House. And it seems that the area where it was built was locally known as Maggot's Castle. And at some point it seems possible that the house took on the name of the area it was in and became Maggot's Castle. But it was also called Folly House at some point. And Wroughton, he had it, the gardens landscaped, and I think there's sort of three fish ponds there, which supposedly you can still see the ponds. There's no sign of the house anymore, but you can see the ponds. And Mark said that he's got this sort of theory, this is sort of a raised bit as you go into the wood, where he thinks the house was. That's where people think the house was. He has another theory about where the house was, and I'll come to that in a minute. But at the moment, Folly Wood, unfortunately, with the footpath being closed, it seems to have been taken over by sort of local motorcyclists, and they were all sort of, both times I went, and I think that when you went, all you could hear was
motorbikes,
all sort of hurtling through the wood. But basically, the bridleway that you're on, so having come over the bridge and heading southeast, is a really deep hollow way. And it's just, and this was the reason that David Alderslade suggested we go there. And it is a fascinating place. And it really is, I found it quite eerie as well. And the story goes that Seymour Wroughton had been drinking in Easterton. And, the lesson, don't drink and drive. He allegedly drove his sort of coach and horses home to Maggot's Castle House, Folly House, whatever it was called, and he came sort of hurtling down this very steep bridleway, holloway, and the coach and horses turned over, and he was decapitated. He was killed, and this is in 1789, and that's why there's this story about the headless horseman. Now, it seems a bit far fetched to me. I mean, if you're a local gentleman, albeit an eccentric one, would you really be driving your own coach and horses? Surely you'd have a man to do that for you. But anyway, that's the story.
It's a fascinating one, because as you walk up this hollow way, it's quite, you've already said, it's quite eerie. It's quite a deep hollow way and very steep sides. And as you walk up it, it does look like a scene from a horror movie. You've got these roots that are coming down from the trees at the top, coming down to the sunken lane. I mean, I'd really urge, go and have a look at the website to see the pictures of these tree roots. They're just extraordinary. And actually, that's what caught David Alderslade's imagination, because he's done a couple of paintings with those roots. And it is just, it's almost gothic-like. It's really...
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's a great word to use. It is gothic, and it's just extraordinary. And look at David's. I think he's done a couple of paintings there, hasn't he? And
yeah.
He's as you can do with when you paint instead of taking photographs, he used a bit of artistic license. So you've got these incredible roots of this beech tree, and it really is one tree in particular. And he's put a huge stained glass window right in the bank in amongst the roots, and it's stunning. It's an incredible photograph, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's funny, because I put a picture of it on Twitter, and of the roots and stuff, and it got a huge amount of interest. People saying, where on earth is that? A lot of people saying, oh, I know where that is. And other people saying, this looks like something out of Lord of the Rings. You know, it's just extraordinary. It's an extraordinary scene. And the curious thing is that just to the side of the roots was this entrance to a small cave. Which I scrambled up the side of the hill, or the side of the hollow, and it was quite very unsteady on the feet, because it's quite eroded and
Well, it's a hands
very
and knees.
Steep.
It's a hands and knees job. Yeah. I mean, it's very sketchy. It's a climb, and it's because this is upper greensand again. Which is quite crumbly. It is sandy, and you spend as much time slipping backwards as you do climbing up, and it is very, very steep. You're having to hang on to the roots of the tree to kind of pull yourself up there.
I couldn't bring myself to go in because I was a bit too big to go in, and it's quite a small cave entrance. But I do know that we do have people that listen and follow what we do and read stuff, and they go and explore for themselves. And I saw on social media one person had actually gone inside the cave quite deep and found a bat roosting in there.
Well, this goes back to Mark's theory about the location for Seymour Wrought's house, because that cave is called, they call it Holy Man's Cave. And Mark said that, I'm not sure he said it was a friend of his had gone into the cave, and apparently it goes back quite some way. And the rumour has it that this went all the way to the cellars of the house, of Castle House or Maggot's Castle or Folly House, and that people would smuggle booze in and out of the cellar. Now, this is a very steep sort of escarpment, if you like. So if the house was down at the bottom, there was no way that you could, a cave halfway up would take you into the cellars of the house way down the hill. So he's got this theory that the house was actually much higher up in Folly Wood. And he sort of referred to a sort of quite level piece of land, like a platform of land up there, where he said, for me, he said, that's the obvious place if there is this link with Holy Man's Cave.
Yep.
I've spent a lot of years as a caver. I used to do a lot. When I lived in Bristol, I used to go caving once or twice a week, and you wouldn't get me in a greenstone cave. It's very crumbly, and that's, it's distinctly dodgy, I think.
So I don't think we're recommending that people go and wander around inside. Have a look at the outside and peer in, by all means, but it's probably not safe.
Yeah, and like you, I climbed up to it and poked my head in and took a photograph and then scrambled back down. But having met Mark, it was, again, another of these sort of life's happy little coincidences. I was continuing to... I started to walk away, having sort of climbed up there. Actually, no, it was a different day. The day I went and had a look, I was with Stu, and unfortunately, I got a real telling off from Stu because I didn't tell him I was going up to have a look. So he carried on walking, and he turned around and saw that I'd gone and disappeared, and thought, and I'd gone. I did disappear for quite some time, and he thought I was in the cave and stuck in there. So he was getting a bit frantic. So where the bloody hell has he gone?
He's either climbed in the cave or he's been kidnapped by the headless horse.
Yeah, exactly.
Never to be seen again.
Yeah, exactly. Trouble is, he knows me too well, and he knows exactly that's exactly the sort of thing I would do, is go and climb in a cave. On the second time, I was just, again, had walked up there and passed the cave and the tree roots, and there was a couple coming down the other way towards me, and they sort of walked past me and stopped and were looking at the roots of the tree. So I sort of went back and said, hi, do you know the story of the tree and everything else, and they said we saw a picture of the roots on an Instagram page. And I immediately said, what, Glencoe? And she said, yes, that was it. And she looked at me and she said, are you Tragic Cyclist? And that's my Instagram title, Tragic Cyclist. Yeah. And I said, yes, I am. And it turns out this was Melanie May and Wayne Ford that I mentioned earlier on. So they'd come down to have a look at it, having seen, I don't know whether they'd seen Twitter or your Twitter feed or just the Instagram post. And so they'd come down to look for themselves.
It's funny because I'm finding that as we're putting this stuff out there, I didn't realise so much. I'm starting to realise it now that actually people do look at our social media feeds and read this stuff.
Yeah.
And we're not talking to ourselves. And they do actually go out and follow our tracks. And very often I'll go and do a route one day, and then I'll discover that several other people have done the same route on the basis of what we've done. So we need to find a way to recognise each other as we're all out walking, so we can have some, you know, social conversations as we're walking around these routes. Because
there's so many
of us out there.
Hence your t-shirts.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I thought about the t-shirts. We should all wear our Hidden Wiltshire t-shirts and go wandering and bump into each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
So heading on, and I've just. We could go on all day, so we risk running out of time here. But
yeah.
So I carried on walking up the Holloway, and if you look up on the map, up to your left, on top of the sort of the embankment, there's something marked on the map called Three Graves?
The Three Graves.
That's right. Yes, found it now. And I was quite intrigued about the story of that. And in fact, I had to talk to Mark Wellahan about it. And the story is that three brothers called the Giddens brothers, are basically in 1644, suffering from the plague, what was called the London Plague in those days, had taken themselves up to this field to die rather than infect the people of nearby Urchfont. And in this field is supposedly where their graves were. Now, you know, there's nothing to be seen there now. I think there's just some sort of concrete fence posts, it looks like, from a distance. But I know that I've read somewhere that there's a move to have the site sort of, you know, because it's on private land, it's in a field. So I think there's a move to have, you know, to negotiate some sort of access and have proper sort of markers put there. Because apparently there were, I think, elm trees were planted at the head of each grave, but they've certainly gone. But Mark was telling me that there's a local farmer, and somebody else said that actually he's a thatcher called Chris Giddens, who lives nearby at Crookwood Farm. And Mark knows him quite well and was chatting about him. And Mark's story is that Chris Giddens sort of denies having any sort of ancestral connection to the Giddens brothers. But apparently, yeah, he's a lovely, lovely old sort of traditional Wiltshire countryman. You know, he sounds a fascinating character. But I was also reading this morning when I was looking at the bishops of the Salisbury and the Potton connection, that Potton was ravaged by the plague, so it seems that Urchfont was spared whilst Potton was hit by the plague in 1644.
But just past there is the wood, isn't there?
Oak Frith. That's right. So the sort of route from there, which I think then becomes it's a byway, takes you right past Oak Frith Wood, which is the Woodland Trust Nature Reserve, which is absolutely beautiful, isn't it? It's a stunning wood.
Stunner. It's really well maintained.
It's again, I think, going to be a place for a lot of bluebells. There were sort of nesting boxes everywhere. I mean, it is really well maintained without being ridiculously neat and tidy. So they have sort of tried to encourage the sort of the understory and the undergrowth, and there were sort of dead hedges sort of laid to encourage sort of wildlife, and yeah, very peaceful spot. I think probably in the summer it's a bit busier. It's pretty close to, I mean, quite close to Urchfont now. But yeah, absolutely beautiful. And there was a couple of little sort of benches there, so Stu and I stopped for lunch. And in fact, the second time I went there, I again bumped into Mel and Wayne, who were sort of seemed to be following a sort of similar course, but in reverse to the one I was on.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a little plaque in the woods. It's called the Fiddler Hale Stone. I think it's marked on the Woodland Trust Information Board. And I was again looking at that this morning. That's Fiddler Hale. There's two guys, two woodsmen, Jesse Fiddler and William Hale. And apparently they were sort of instrumental in clearing and the land and planting the wood and maintaining the wood in the early part of the 20th century. So, you know, it's nice to see that local people have put a memorial up to them. But from Oak Frith, I went into, the second time I went into Urchfont, the second visit, because I, like you, I parked in Urchfont on the second visit. And I went to have a look at the church in Urchfont. It was locked up, but, you know, because of COVID, but, Mark told me that he had a sculpture there, So I thought that the sculpture was in the church. So I thought, oh, you know, it's a shame I'll not be able to see it because it's locked. But then there was this great big sort of lump of wood in the grounds of the, in the churchyard, and I'm looking at it. And I thought, well, it just looks like a piece of that, you know, the roots of the beech tree in the Holloway in through Folly Wood, and I then realised that this was Mark's sculpture, and it's a big piece, and it's right by the path as you come up the path to the front door of the church. Yeah, it's a fascinating piece of work. I know he's got another one at Dauncey's School over at West Lavington, and there was a third. I can't remember what he said the other one was. He's got another sort of really substantial piece of sculpture.
Yeah. Yeah. Etchefont's quite a picturesque place, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's lovely.
It's got a lovely little pond. And
yeah, yeah.
They've got the old manor house there, which I think used to be owned by Wiltshire Council. It used to be some kind of an education place.
Yeah, it did.
Place.
Yeah, yeah. My wife went on a training course there when she was a teacher. I think it's now it's still some sort of college.
Yeah, it's open. It's not so open to the public now. I went there a couple of years ago. They had an art exhibition in the grounds, so you could go in and have a wander around the whole gardens. It was a lovely place.
Yeah,
absolutely delightful place.
When I was sitting in the churchyard, I stopped there for a coffee on the second visit, and a guy sort of appeared behind me, dressed in full beekeeping suit, and he lived in a sort of a cottage right next door to the church, and he was on his way up to his hives, which are actually tucked behind the church. So he sells, you know, local honey, and you can't get more local than that from his cottage. And I think they might sell it in the community shop in Urchfront as well. But on the first visit, when I was walking with Stu, we sort of headed on up to Salisbury Plain from there, and we were heading towards New Plantation, which again, you know, I won't describe exactly where we went. It's just up on, you look at it on the map, you can't miss it. Although we nearly went to another plantation, but you want New Plantation as opposed to Goosehole Plantation, which is sort of private. But there is a footpath that takes you up to New Plantation, and that is another place you could park. You do find a few people park up there on the plains and sort of go walking, and then from there we sort of followed the range perimeter path to find a way back down to Easterton, because Stu was sort of in the army for more years than he probably care to remember. I took him to see there's a quite well-known memorial to a young German soldier who was killed on a training exercise in 1993, a guy called Dirk Nerfel. So I thought I'd take Stu to see that, because it's quite a poignant sort of place to have his memorial. In fact, on a later visit, a bit further down, there's a new World War One memorial as well, which has sort of appeared on this perimeter path around the plains. So that also is worth a visit.
There's two or three memorials down that way, which are hidden off the main path. But they're fascinating. I mean, it's just to go for a drive around there and find those little things and stop and look over the plain itself. I mean, that was the thing that struck me when I got up there, is you kind of stand on the path and look across the plain, and you just see miles and miles and miles of open, unspoilt countryside. You really do feel the remoteness of it, really.
Yeah, and in every direction as well. And so, you know, as you said, I mean, you're looking right across the impact area. So you've got the Lark Hill and West Down impact areas. And in fact, the day Stu and I were up there, there was a lot of live firing going on, and you could see all the shells going off in the impact area, and the smoke everywhere. In fact, at one point the smoke was all blown down. It was just completely obliterated Urchfont. We couldn't see Urchfont from up there because it was just covered in the smoke. You could see down to the White Horse at Westbury. You could see north, you know, God knows how far. Amazing views. And it's easy to get to. I mean, it's a dirt track, but you could drive a car up there. It's a byway. As long as you're careful with the potholes. There's some pretty big potholes up there. But
yeah,
if you take it steady. Anyway, yes, that was the end of the walk for us. Anyway.
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting walk. It was it had a little bit of drama in it with the history and the photographic scenes of the trees and the usual frustrations about rights of way.
Yeah.
Fair amount of hills to get the cardiovascular exercise, and plenty to see. It was really delightful walk.
Yeah, I
So
really, really enjoyed it.
yeah, it was great. So I think we can wrap up for
Yeah,
this
just
week.
our usual credits and pleasantries at the end. So, just a reminder about Lova boots. The offer is still there because I bumped into somebody the other day who'd used it and was wearing a very smart pair of new Lova walking boots.
Very good. And with a
So
20% discount as well.
absolutely. So he listened to the podcast and he went to the lovauk.co.uk or whatever it's called, the Lova UK website, and he put in your discount code, which is HW for Hidden Wiltshire 20, HW20, so 20%
Brilliant.
discount. Yep, don't forget to go to the website for the show notes where we put links to all these things, books and to Lova and what have you, and a bit more detail about some of the things we've talked about. And to thank Steve Dixon again for the music. The piece of music we used in the middle is a piece called My Daughter, and that's actually a collaboration between Steve Dixon and a friend of his called Dave, and I'm going to get this pronunciation wrong, Guiville or Gouville, spelled Guiville. So Steve and Dave sort of wrote and performed that between them. So thanks, guys.
Brilliant.
And I guess that just leaves us to talk about the next episode.
Yes, so I thought the next episode we could go to Fonthill, because I recently did a 6 mile walk around there and wrote it up on the blog, and I think you've done it as well, Paul, and it's fresh in the mind and
Yeah.
it's a little different. It's a little different. It's not so wild and unswept as a lot of parts of Wiltshire because it's a working estate. It's quite manicured, but it's an interesting place to walk around. So there's a lot of history and interesting characters to talk about.
Yeah.
So we'll do that in 2 weeks' time.
Absolutely.
And in the meantime, check out the shop, hiddenwiltshire.com/shop. Get yourself a t-shirt and we'll start waving to each other as we're walking around the countryside. So see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye for now.